Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 138 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
And this week, our main topic was inspired by the sudden outage of our lives when Instagram, Facebook, and WhatsApp disappeared. And everybody went, what's this fresh air stuff? What's this real world? So we've got that to talk about. But before we get onto that, and we just want to talk about that, I suppose, in the terms of what it brought up for each of us. But first of all, what have you been up to, Alice?
Well, it's been, it always feels like quite a gap, doesn't it, when we have a longer period.
Yeah.
We had the lovely Joe on last week. And sometimes when it's week to week, I think, oh, everything's the same week to week. And then we have a 2 week gap and I think so much has changed.
Yeah.
Funny, our perception of time. So since you and I last spoke, I've been away on a kind of business mastermindy thing. And it's interesting because I think often we get questions about, you know, what is the right kind of workshop to take, or where should I be going next with my work, or what do I want to learn about? And I just always find it doesn't matter what it is, but time periods away from home really help you view things from a little bit of a distance and put things in context. And that wasn't an art related thing, but it was nice to get out and about, talk to different people, get a different take on a number of things going on in life at the moment. And quite weird to be in a hotel on my own for 3 nights.
Quite nice, I would imagine.
Well, yeah, although I wouldn't want to do the food part, I have to say, that the limited to crappy bread for breakfast, and it wasn't the best for breakfast. You appreciate your home comforts and what you have in your home space when you get to choose, I think, when some of those things disappear. But yeah, so that. And then I've come back and I went back to the studio and it was looking all a bit bedraggled. You know how studios look when they're completely empty of work? They're not that much fun where they're so packed and you can't move either. But when they're sort of empty, they look a bit sad and pathetic and bedraggled, don't they? So I had a good morning the other morning, having a thorough, just, I moved things around, you know, I shifted things. There are things that I want to get prepared for, perhaps for filming, and I've been trying to work out how to do that in such a big space because it's quite difficult and echoey. And I also have been rearranging so that I could get going for some work on paper. And so I've made a start on that. So that's fun. I'm reviewing what I'm going to be taking to Manchester Art Fair, and there is never enough space. You always panic that you've not got enough pieces, and then when I actually plan it out, it's actually the alternative. There's not enough space,
yeah, to put everything,
to hang nicely what I want to show. So I've just got to think about what's going to work together and what I can take and what I can't take. So yeah, that perhaps is going to inform what I really get to grips with next in the studio.
When is that happening, the art?
Well, it's quite soon, you see. In my head, it's a long time away, but it's the 16th of November.
Wow.
So if we've got half term coming up, it's pretty soon.
Yeah.
It's pretty soon.
About 5 weeks from when we're talking.
Yeah, so I've got some gaps that I want to fill in terms of it being a nice group of work to take to an art fair experience. I think it's going to be quite nice. And what I've actually noticed is that I think that as I go forward, there is an easier flow from one body of work to the next. And that's quite nice.
Yeah.
I don't feel so much this thing about doing something and then it's finished and then there's a whole other different set of things. So, just noticing that. So what about you? You've had a trip too.
Yes, I was away. So that was a couple of weeks ago now, but I went away for a short trip. Just thinking when you said about your home comforts, we stayed in a holiday cottage. So somebody else's it's another man's holiday cottage, which he then rents out on Airbnb when he's not using it. And same thing, it was perfectly nice, but it's like, oh, you know, there's nowhere to plug my hairdryer in. And where do you do this? And all the things that you've set up in your home just to be the way you need them to be. When you go to somebody else's home, you realize we haven't got that. We haven't got that. It just is a bit disconcerting, but, you know, first world problems, not really a problem. Very beautiful place that we stayed. And it's funny because I've recently had this kind of yearning dream of, oh, one day I'd like to live in Cornwall on the coast where they have ancient buildings and sea and rocks. And then I forgot, of course, that if you go far enough north on our coast, you have the same stuff. Mm-hmm. Yes, it might be slightly colder, but it's the same stuff. And what used to happen when I was a kid, we used to go to the resorts slightly further south, which are more kind of seasidey, amusement arcades and, you know, that kind of thing.
Places and like Scarborough?
Scarborough, Bridlington, Filey, they're all, you know, seasidey. And then when you get above Whitby, which is kind of in between, Whitby's like a bit of both, then you get to these lovely little towns and villages and ports, which I'd forgotten all about. And you know, because you've been there. So beautiful, gorgeous, getting up in the morning, taking Riley and just walking down to the sea and actually just watching the sea, which he's frightened of. So I have to hold on to him while he tries to run away from the waves. But oh, lovely. I really, really enjoyed it. Besides the fact that I lost my phone on the second day on the beach. On Sands End Beach, which anybody who knows Sands End Beach, it's massive, long, long beach with not very much there. So what happened was I lost it. Phil started phoning it to try and find it. Another family heard the phone ringing, found it, picked it up, took it home. I was down the other end of the beach scouring among these rocks because I'm sure, like everybody listening, if I go on a beach, I pick up pebbles and look for fossils and gather things to bring home with me. So that I thought that's where I'd left it, but I hadn't. It was at the other end of the beach. Anyway, I don't have a password on my phone. So they found, they opened it, got my information, emailed me, said, we found your phone, and I got it back the next day.
You don't have a password on your phone?
No, but isn't it lucky? Isn't it fortunate?
Well, no, because if you'd called it, they could have answered it anyway.
Yeah, well, Phil was calling it that evening. No one was answering, but eventually, I guess they would have. Eventually they would have picked it up when we were caught. But anyway, so that happened. So the trip was great. The nice thing that happened, though, was while I was away, I mentioned to my handyman neighbour, if you have any time and it's going to rain, if it's a rainy day, do you want to paint my studio while I'm gone? Because it was a year and a half and it's covered in paint and it just needed a freshening up. Yeah. I came back and, oh, my God, it's spotless, it's clean, and it's all organized because he's very organized. So he'd like cleared up all my junk and structured it so he could paint.
We all need an Andy, kind of knew
he'd have to do that if he was going to paint. He'd have to like, and he fixed the drawer that wouldn't close anymore. So yeah, I came in and it's beautiful, but then I needed to start painting. I was like, oh, I can't spill paint on this lovely white floor. So I've come up with a master solution. Do you want to know my master solution to my floor?
Yeah, go on.
Slightly expensive, but I've decided not as expensive as paying him to keep repainting it all the time. And I don't want to repaint it.
Yeah.
I had a big roll of canvas that was a bit too thin. I bought it, but it was a bit too thin. I didn't really like the thickness of it. So it just covers, rolled out, it just covers the whole floor. I've stapled it down, stretched it out. Now I get drips on it. And then I'm thinking, when it's absolutely filthy, I can cut it into pieces and use it.
Yeah,
it will be wasted. Some of it might get, you know, some of it might get wrinkled. But actually, good floor solution for studios and stapled down. So now I'm flinging paint around again happily.
Yeah, it's lovely. I have some kind of rough newsprinty type paper that I use, you know, on tables or backing or when I'm spraying or all sorts of things. And it gets a lovely collection of marks. And when I was tidying up, I thought, I can't throw this away. So I've got them all in a little stack. And I'm either going to use them as collage pieces somehow, or just, they're quite nice almost, just mementos, because they keep the, they've got all the colours and everything that you've been using.
So, typical artist, we're like, totally, oh no, I can't throw that away.
And I have to say, sometimes I do things like that and I keep all of these things and I gather them and then I go, mess, and chuck them all away. So it kind of goes around in circles.
But I just have to very quickly say, so my biggest thing from this week is that my book is out today. And I'm very sorry to anyone internationally, as I predicted and as I kept telling everyone, that Book Depository takes orders for things they don't have. And then when the release date comes around, the book's sold out and they can't fulfill all the orders. So I don't know if you get an email from Book Depository saying your book's not coming, it's not my fault and it's not my publisher's fault, it's their fault. The same happened with David Mankin's book, I think. Somebody told me they got let down with that. So it will be back in stock there when they reprint more copies, but the copies they had have obviously gone. I think it's on Amazon, and I know the publisher has some. But this is why I kept saying, please pre-order from me, because I knew if you pre-order from me, I'm ordering enough copies to make sure that everyone can have one, but the publishers only print a certain amount. And then they're going to reprint, but it's going to take 4 weeks. So I noticed this morning, I went on to see it and I noticed Amazon had it, but Book Depository already says out of stock. And that's because of all the US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand people who didn't want to, I understand, didn't want to pay the shipping. But that's the problem. These places don't always have what they say they have. So hopefully they had enough for everyone that they took an order from. That's what I'm hoping. But please don't email me if they didn't, because it's nothing to do with me.
Logistics are so difficult, aren't they, with things like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's
really difficult. You can go around in circles. I've had another issue with, you know, excessive delivery of print costs, and so I can understand the pain of paying for shipping, but that's what it is.
Yeah. And they're not, you know, I'll let you in on a little secret, everybody. I paid the shipping bill this week to the publishers, because they paid for everything. £27,000 was my shipping bill. That's the biggest shipping bill I've ever paid. £27,000.
Jesus.
And that's, you know, everybody paid me for the shipping. So it's not that, that was never my money. I'm not complaining, because everybody paid for their own shipping, but that is how much it costs. It's not like we were padding out the costs when we said it costs £30 to send a book to America. Unfortunately, that's what it costs now. It's mad.
Yeah.
But on the plus side, you know, it's there and I wrote it and it's for sale somewhere. And I'm just taking a moment today to appreciate my achievement, because that is something I never thought I'd manage. And I did.
We spoke about it before, you said you hadn't managed to sit down
and look at it,
actually look at it and enjoy it. Did you take it away with you and find the time to do that?
No, I didn't take it away, but I have gone through it and read it. And funnily enough, I talked to my best friend who's having his novel published in March, and it arrived from the publishers, his proof copy. And I said, oh, what's it like looking at it? And he said, I haven't really taken it out of the box. And I said, oh, I did exactly the same thing. I couldn't really like spend time with it for a while. I said, you will in a couple of weeks, you'll feel like you can look at it. So yeah, I did go through it and I found two typos. They're all that. And one of them changes the meaning quite significantly of a sentence early on in the book. And I just can't believe with the amount of times we all proofed it that I didn't catch it, but I didn't. So anyway, it makes it sound, yeah, I'm not even going to say what it makes it sound like.
No,
it makes
me sound, because no one else will notice. No one else will notice. So it's fine.
I hope not. I bet you will. I'll see if you can spot it. That'll be your challenge.
That's up to me. Then I'll be texting. Was it this? Was it this? Oh, it's so good.
So if anybody does want to grab a copy of that, you can find it. I think you can still buy it from the publisher. You can find the link on my website. Just go to louisefletcherart.com/book. Moving on to our main topic. So this week, what day was it this happened? Was it Tuesday? Yes, it was Tuesday, I think.
Was it Tuesday? Or
no,
was it
Monday?
Monday.
It was Monday.
I think it was Monday, because it was the first time of time to shine, and I'd set people a little kind of project to do, and then I was going to do a pop-up live stream, and that's how I first knew about it, because I got my phone out and I looked at Facebook to do a little live stream into the group, and there was like, oh, Facebook's not working, and I was like, this flipping internet, I'm so, you know, sometimes why is it not working? And you know, I could see all the bars were there, but it wasn't loading. And then I went downstairs and the machine all all the lights were right and I reset. And then I thought, no, it's something to do with Facebook. This is weird. So I, you know, shut it down. I restarted my phone. I updated the app. I did all those things that you did. Still blank, still blank. I was getting a bit effy and sweary at this point. And then my husband, bless him, who does not do any tech stuff, he had his phone and he just went, oh. He said it might be something to do with the fact that Facebook and Instagram are having a complete worldwide outage. And I was like, oh, okay, well, if that's what it is, then that's fine. And let's do something else instead. And it's that's
always these things happen when you're trying to do something like you were trying to do. Always.
But this is the thing, isn't it? Because there is never a time when we're not trying to do something. It's like a lot of these admin update, computer backup sort of ish tasks. You kind of think, oh, I'll do that in a week where I don't really need it in case something happens. When is that? Yeah. When is that? We use these things all the time. And I think what was interesting was, it was quite funny because apparently everyone just went straight onto Twitter and just went, ah! Shit, what's happening? You're going to come and talk about it on Twitter. And there were some really funny like memes and pictures going around. But I think a lot of people realize quite how what a gap it left, just in terms of the way perhaps that we interact with certain other people in our lives. You know, actually it wasn't I kind of thought, oh, that's a bit annoying, but it didn't throw me into panic or anything. And I just thought, right, how else can I do this? Okay, I'm going to have to do it in an email instead. And that's really one of the things that I thought made it worthwhile talking about here is how we rely on social media, how we use it, and, you know, whether there need to be alternatives, whether we need to have backup plans and things.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things when I first started with my own business years ago that I remember hearing over and over again from the internet marketers of the day was, don't rely on any other platform than your own platform. And you must send people to your own website and you must get people to sign up for your own newsletter. So it was drilled into me from that very early stage that, yes, these things can either go away or change their policy. Mm-hmm. Just change their policy so that Facebook suddenly decides businesses can't use it. Or, you know, I know they wouldn't do that because that wouldn't make any financial sense. But all sorts of things could happen. The government could decide to break up Facebook into lots of different little companies or who knows. And so that reliance on it. What was interesting for me was just the situation of that particular day was I wasn't in using it during any of that time. And my only awareness of the issue was that my team was discussing it on Slack because they were going to be doing, there was going to be a Q&A call and Jamie posts something on a Monday on Facebook about the Q&A call for my course. And they were saying, what are we going to do? And they were discussing that without me. And I popped on and saw it and said, yeah, I think we should do this. But that was my only awareness of it, just because it so happened it wasn't at a point where I was able to be on the internet. So it was quite interesting to experience it from the perspective, very different perspective than I would have if I'd been about to do one of my live streams for my course or launch something, you know, mm-hmm. or any of like the situation you were in. Mm. And it's a reminder as well. It kind of gave me a life reminder of, this is a bit profound now, but that life is what we pay attention to.
Yeah.
If we're not paying attention to that,
I'm positive
my mum had no idea that Facebook and Instagram mm-hmm. and WhatsApp went down at all. I'm positive she had no clue, even though she occasionally uses them. She might have seen it on the news that night. If I'd have been launching my course, I would have been in a serious panicky meltdown. Like, oh my God, I've got this planned and I've told everyone, what am I going to do? So that was a bit of it was just like, oh yeah, it is just what we pay attention to. I'm very proud of you that you managed to kind of stay calm, because I've had mini meltdowns in those situations before. I remember when Zoom wouldn't stream to Facebook and I was doing a live launch and I couldn't do it and everyone was waiting. That was different.
I think in that situation it's different if you've got people waiting at a particular time. But even then, you know, you can send out an email, you know, the tech broke.
You can't do anything about it. And so all the panicking in the world. My mum said something to me this week, and totally unrelated, but something had happened in our family. And she said, I'm not going to worry about it. It is what it is. I'm not going to worry about it. Yeah. I'm just going to do X, Y, and Z, and then I'm not going to think about it anymore. If you knew my mum, that's like, okay, aliens came down and took my mother and put someone else in her place. But I was so proud of her that she just decided, yeah, well, it's happened. So that's what I'm just going to deal with it. And that, I think, that's such a valuable attitude to have. But likewise, the point you brought up, or somebody brought up online, or maybe everybody brought up online, is this going back to this idea of, but it reminds you, how much are you relying on this thing and what happens when it goes away? On the other hand, I will just say it was only 5 hours. I kind of thought they're going to have this back up in no time, because they're going to pay any amount of money to get this back up. So,
it was the longest time that they've ever been out for. And I don't understand completely all the tech behind it, but basically they have a whole system of worldwide servers. So basically one batch of computers tells another batch of computers where to send information. So that's why you could open your app, but it wasn't actually loading any new information, because it was just being told there is no new information. The thing with Facebook is they use Facebook to run Facebook. So when nobody can log into Facebook, they can't log into Facebook in order to make it better. So they literally kind of created this muddle for themselves. And I don't know what it was. It is a little bit silly, because, you know, you don't rely on the thing that's holding up the thing. I think for me, it was a reminder that actually it is a good idea to make sure that you spread your eggs across different baskets. And, you know, social media, it's made me rethink, and there were a lot of people panicking about, oh, what do we do instead? What do we do instead? I don't think there is a what do we do instead, because I think social media, Facebook, Instagram serve a very particular purpose. And as yet, there isn't really anything else that challenges them in the same way, because they are both very, very, very good at what they do and what we use them for. And if they weren't, we wouldn't use them, because we wouldn't be happy using them. We wouldn't enjoy using them. I get a huge amount of enjoyment out of Instagram. And there isn't anything else in my book that rivals that, that allows that regular touch, that allows you to keep in touch with people, that allows the privacy of DMs as well as sharing, that allows a creative outlet. Twitter isn't the same. No. It's just not. TikTok's not the same. It's just not. No. So there isn't anything else that is going to fill that gap. I think it made me think a little bit about Facebook groups, which is something that is where most of my interaction on Facebook itself comes. But again, I've looked at this over the last year a number of times at what the alternatives are. And there are alternatives. So, you know, if you're running courses, some course platforms have their own community options. Mighty Networks is one. Top of the list when I've looked, I have to say, is something called Circle. But still doesn't measure up to Facebook in terms of what it can give communities.
No. So people say that all the time. I get that question all the time. Can you not use something other than Facebook? Because we don't even want to get into all the political stuff about Facebook, but there is a lot of people who don't want to use it. If you were trying to run an online course, you would soon understand that there isn't another option. Yes, there might be ones that look nicer even, that do have bells and whistles even, but people won't use them. People taking the course won't log on to them. And so the community doesn't build, the conversation doesn't happen. The ubiquity of Facebook means that people who use it are logged into it all the time. So it's very easy for them to pop in. They get notifications, they pop in, they answer a comment. It becomes part of your life. Whereas I know I've done it. I've taken a business course that had its own platform for commenting. I never went to it. No. And I get email notifications and I just delete them, like, oh, I can't even remember what my password is and I don't remember where it is. And I know I could have clicked the link, but I don't do it. So Facebook, but I do, whenever someone has a Facebook group linked to a course, I use that.
Yeah.
Well, there isn't another, I don't think, at the moment, option. But this thing you mentioned, I want to just go back to, you said about spreading it out, and I agree with that. But on the other hand, I'm always giving people advice. Don't feel overwhelmed. Pick one. Like, don't feel overwhelmed by trying to do it all. But if you do just pick one because you don't want to be overwhelmed and you pick Instagram, that's owned by Facebook. And so if Facebook goes down, Instagram goes down.
Yeah.
I have YouTube as well, and that isn't owned. So I suppose the thing
owned
I would
by Google
say,
though, isn't it? So you've got the same monolithic.
Yeah, but it's not owned by, so if Facebook went down, it wouldn't affect YouTube. Yeah. If YouTube went down, I just meant, I suppose if you're going to do two, the thing would be do two that aren't owned by the same company then, if we're saying to watch out for something like this.
Yeah, I meant more from the point of view of, I think one of the other issues with the Facebook thing going down was sometimes, you know, when you, sometimes there are certain apps and you can log in with Facebook.
Yes.
You have a choice, log in with email and Google, or log in with Facebook.
Yeah.
If you had logged in with Facebook, you're stuck. Now, this was a one-off, but with all of those things, actually, I would much rather log in with email.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I can access that. I can reset that. You know, you don't get caught in. And anybody who's ever had an issue with Facebook, with a logging in loop or you know, sometimes you can get stuck in a slightly mindless loop of trying to work out how to reset something. So I don't use Facebook for logging into. I think I have one thing that I use it for logging into. And, you know, communications, we use Slack. You know, you and I could have messaged each other on Slack. Actually, we ended up texting.
Yeah. Slack, isn't that owned by Facebook as well, though?
But it had to go down.
It had some issues for some people, but it didn't go down. Yeah, because I thought
WhatsApp is owned by Facebook. That went down.
Yeah. I thought, oh God, Slack will go down, and then they won't even be able to communicate with each other, but that stayed up. So,
but I think in terms of you know, what we do as artists and audience building, if there isn't an alternative to the kind of regular touch social media point of view, but there should always be, exactly like you said, and I was always taught this phrase, you know, don't build your house on someone else's ground. You know, don't build it on something that can go. And for me, that goes to, I get questions all the time. Should I put my art on Saatchi or Artfinder? And at the beginning, Artfinder was great. It was small. It promoted people. Then they changed the terms. They will only really promote your work if you pay them now a fee each month. They can discount your work anytime they like. Do you want to give someone that amount of control over your business?
Yeah.
No.
The only reason to post your work on those sites, I believe, is because you think they're going to sell it for you. You think that somebody's going to find it there rather than on your website. But it's a needle in a haystack. It's very unlikely.
Yeah. And I think on all of those things, you have to learn completely. You have to do all the same things that you have to do on your own site. So you have to understand what the buyer journey is. You have to understand what people are looking for. On those sites in particular, you have to know particular words and phrases that people might be searching for. So you come up in their search engines. Whereas if you're building something on a website and you can share, you've got images on there that you can share out to Pinterest. People find them on Pinterest. They come back to your website. There's something that they're interested in. They sign up for your mailing list. All of that is within your control. You can create that experience for people however you want and lead them through it. And so that's what I mean about having eggs in different baskets, is not relying on social media is not your business.
So you make a really great point that if you get people to your website, you can lead them through, et cetera, et cetera. But let's talk about that a bit more. So people are listening and they're going, yeah, but how do I get them to come to my website? It's easy on Instagram and Facebook because there they are. But how do I get them to come to my website? And let's talk more about what this means, about what you can do when they get there. You said leading them through, but what does that actually mean? So how do you get people from Instagram and Facebook or wherever you are onto your website, or how do you try to do that anyway?
I think it's quite hard from Instagram, actually, because people are in their Instagram bubble. So you can do things. You can have a link in your bio. You can set up a page that directs people so that it's not just one link, so they don't just come to a generic homepage. They come to somewhere that says, hi, you follow me on Instagram, you know, but we don't always see something. This is where you might want to go next. Or if you want something more reliable, here is my mailing list. So I think it's a little bit harder to get people off Instagram. Do I do shout outs for people to say, come and join my mailing list? Yes, I do. Does it work? Yeah, not. But that's almost not what people are on social media for. It's not really what I think of it as. I think of social media as a way to keep in touch with people regularly. And I think what the other day highlighted is we can be a little bit over-reliant on social media to do all the work for us. What gets people to my website bigger is often other traffic from things like Pinterest. So I think directing people into your website, yes, it can come from social media, but actually coming from other places is also important. And we can forget that. I mean, I think, you know, you're much more active on YouTube. We've spoken about this before, much more active on YouTube than I am. That is also another source. It's where people can find out about you. So I've always felt of it as a web, like a network of other different things where people come in contact with you. But your website should absolutely be the home hub of it.
Yeah. And what I find is, I know this about YouTube more than others, but I'm sure it applies to the others. People will message me through my website and say, I think I first found you on YouTube. I think I first found you on Facebook. So even when you're thinking, you look at your Instagram stats and you go, oh, I only got 7 clicks on that last post. That's not actually really the full measurement, because when they've got to know you, so I found Alice Sheridan on Instagram, I like what you're doing. And I remember doing this. I think I did find you on Instagram. I'm positive I went and Googled you.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I didn't click the link in your bio. I probably went and looked you up and found anywhere else you were to see if you had other videos or what else you had. So I think we've got to remember that we don't have to. Everyone's been saying this week on Instagram, come over and join my mailing list right now. We all have to stay in touch. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think remembering that people will look you up if they like your artwork or what you post on social media. So what you post has to be interesting, and it, we've said all that before. And then when they get to your website, it's got to be enticing in some way that ties in with what they experienced on Instagram, which is the tough part. I went to an artist's website, and not going to name names, but I was really interested in their work, and I looked them up. This was a couple of weeks ago, and the website was old, so it didn't work on my phone. And then I couldn't get the images to come up. And then when I got the images to come up, they didn't have prices on. Some did and some didn't. And I gave up. And do you know, I never went back and looked. I've just realized now I never went back and looked that up. I probably will go back to my computer now I've mentioned it, but it went out of my head, and I didn't buy a painting, because the experience on I found her on Instagram. The experience on Instagram was amazing. The experience on the website sucked. So,
and I think that's the big reminder for me of this week is exactly that, is that there is so much talk about Instagram because we do it every day, because we like it, because it's kind of easy, that it's just a reminder, where are you with these other things? You know, where is your website? Does your website fully reflect you? And that, it takes a bit of time. It takes a bit of evolution. And we, and I hold my hand up to this, tend to think, okay, that's done on a website. And then you can forget about it for a while. And you can forget about it for a while. You do a certain amount, you know, you're tearing your hair out, you've got some stuff done, website's kind of working, that's good. And then you forget about it, and you look at it later and you think, and I have got this. I have focused my attention on my website, on current work that's available. My, if you like, my archive pages of previous collections of work don't reflect my journey anymore. I need to pay attention to that part of things as well. And I think that's really what this showed for me, is, you know, just that little reminder. Don't forget about those things, because that is what is within your control when Facebook isn't.
And one thing you do really well on your website that I don't do really well, because you mentioned it, having a special page for Instagram when you come from Instagram, you have a lovely personal touch to some of those pages, which takes time and effort. So I have a links page and I made my own. Everybody, don't use Linktree. Make your own links page. It's very, very easy. If you use Linktree, it's another, you're building your house on someone else's land again.
Yeah.
Make your own page. But mine is very much, here are the links. It doesn't say, you found me on Facebook. You know, let's stay in touch. Oh, you found me on Instagram. It could do, particularly Instagram, where you put a link in your bio. It could be a special page. And I've noticed that. I can't think what else with you, but a couple of times. And so at the moment, I'm working on a sales page for my Ted Hughes paintings. We're getting them uploaded to the website because the book's coming out. And I'm working on a sales page for that. And I'm very much keeping that in mind, trying to learn from that. And like, okay, they're coming specifically for this. So what can I tell them about this and not everything else? So they don't have to come to the homepage and get past my courses and my other things that they're not looking for.
I wonder if there is something in this, because I think what I have learned to do to a degree and I'm still learning to do, and actually I don't think I've told you this, I've signed up for quite an in-depth copywriting course. Now everyone's going to go, oh God, I don't want to have to do copy, I just want to paint. But okay, forget the fact that it's called copywriting. What we're basically talking about is your words, your language, how you create that experience for people so that you do that, get that sense of continuity. And I think very much at the beginning, my feeling was website, shiny, professional, shop front, got to look proper.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah, and now I think what social media has taught me is it's okay to use colloquialisms. It's okay to chat on your website like you do on social media. And that's what it's brilliant for. It softens you. You get so many chances on social media to practice, essentially, every day. You can practice. How do I talk to people? What feels right? What do people respond to? What feels like I've done a post that is showing my work or talking about it in a way that makes sense to me? Don't forget to take that over to the other things that you do, like your website, like how you write emails. Don't suddenly switch into professional mode and do it in a different way. And there are things that I need to go back and, you know, review and improve with that in mind. So yeah, you know, when Facebook goes down, maybe that's a good reminder.
I can spend 5 hours doing that. I heard another quite well-known artist advising people to make sure that on their website their bio is in the third person and everything is very, very professional. And everything inside me was just screaming, no, I don't. I think the opposite. I think a website, more and more and more we're realizing that when the internet first came along, and being older, we remember when it first came along, you thought you took whatever you did in old life and put it on the internet. So if a company had a brochure, they put their brochure on the internet. Yes. And then you started to realize, oh no, it's a whole different thing. We can do different things with this. And being more interactive and personal is the magic of it. And it's funny to think you're doing a copywriting course, because actually of our two websites, I think yours is much better in the copywriting. And I didn't even do most of mine. And I'm not insulting the person who did it, but you've got a very nice way of, like, your pop-up box. I can't remember what the wording is on it when it pops up, but it's very friendly and easygoing and non-sales. It feels like someone who's not pushing you all the way through the website. And that's really important.
I think it's about recognizing where people who are viewing it are. And that's the difference between social media. Perhaps we find that a little bit easier to do, or I suppose that's what I'm helping people encourage to do in time to shine, is understand that it's not, oh, here's my thing, it's talking to people. And if we can translate that to other areas, then that's what's going to help us. You know what I think websites are a little bit more like, rather than here's a brochure. Do you have those books when you were a kid that was a choose your own adventure
thing? Yeah. Yeah.
It's that. It's like, you're here now. Talk to you in this is the scene now. Where do you want to go next? Choose this or choose this?
Yeah.
And it just becomes a different way that you can lead people through. And that's all it is. So I think my pop-up says, hi, if you found me, I understand that you might not wanting to be, you know, choosing a piece of art today, because I don't think people do just pop onto your website and go, okay, bye, just like that. They might do if they followed you for a very long time, fine. But actually, the point on the website is to invite people to keep in touch for a slightly more gentle journey.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's just how it all fits together, isn't it? And I know that it feels like a lot, but it's appreciating the different stages of it. And I think if we can, you've got a good point about encouraging people onto your mailing list, and I think that that should be our ultimate goal. I know that Megan Woodard Johnson, she did a story which had a very good point. She said, you know, I realized that there were a lot of people who actually I would lose touch with, I would forget, particularly on Instagram. I don't know their Instagram handles, I don't know their names. So she said, I'm trying to keep a bookmarked list of artists' websites that I like, so that I know I can always go back to that. Now, you could just copy artists' websites into a Google Doc. Would you go back to that? I don't know. Most artists, they're not going to send you a million emails. They're nice emails to get usually. Why not?
Well, that's the other point that is I wanted to talk about, is getting attention from someone is the first step.
Yeah.
Keeping it is much harder.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can get someone to sign up for your mailing list, and then you have to mail them with interesting things, because if you don't, you will lose them. They might not unsubscribe. They might just never. I've got so many emails from companies where I just never unsubscribe. I just delete them when I see them. Don't ever open them. So, but there are a few artists who I'm on the mailing list for, and I always open what they send me, because it's always beautiful or interesting or something fun. And that's what we need to make our newsletters be. So the amount of energy and time we put into thinking about what to put on social media should be at least equal to the amount of energy and time we think about what to put in those newsletters, because that's the key. Every time I send a newsletter, I get unsubscribes every time, because sending an email reminds some people, oh, I don't want to get these. They're coming in and I don't want them. And the bigger the list, the more unsubscribes you'll get. But the unsubscribes never outweigh the new subscribes. So I feel like I'm okay. If it ever got to the point where, oh, more people are unsubscribing than joining, then you know you've got a problem. And I think you have to keep, just like on Instagram, if you start losing followers, hand over fist, something's going wrong. But just keeping it interesting enough that list keeps gradually growing rather than gradually declining is so important. And if you leave it a year before you email people, and this is personal experience from the past, they'll all unsubscribe when they get in.
Because they'll have forgotten who you are by then.
Like, who's this person?
Yeah.
Get rid of that. So keep it regular. And I know it's so hard for people, but we've said this before, if you don't like writing, do a little video, do a little audio if you want to, do whatever you feel comfortable with as a way of messaging, something that people can expect and know. It is so important, and that they enjoy. And when you think, oh, but they won't enjoy anything from me, they will, if you just tell them about what you're doing, honestly. As if you were talking to a friend.
If they don't, then they're not worth being on your email list anyway. So it doesn't matter. You haven't lost anything. Yeah. But I think that that's exactly what this week reminded me. I am guilty of spending too much time on Instagram because I like it. but actually, I'd already recognized that. That's why, you know, I want to spend more time with writing, with actually sorting out. My issue is that my email list has grown and isn't very well sorted, because it's just grown over time. So that's really what I'm hoping this copywriting is going to help me sort out, is who's interested in what, so that I can lead people a little bit more on the journey that's right for them. And so I'm already taking steps in place to pay attention to this, but that's really what the other day highlighted for me, is that actually all of this other stuff, it's not even just as important, it's more important. And we tend to think too much about social media just because we're in there on a regular basis.
Yeah. So to wrap up, it seems like our basic advice is use social media, enjoy social media, but use it strategically to direct people to your home hub, which is your website, and put as much time and effort, or more time and effort, into making that what you want people to find, and that's something enticing and intriguing. And then you'll start to see the results from all the hard work you're putting into the social media. So to close out, Alice, what's inspired you this week?
I've got a funny for you. which I'll tell you in a minute. We actually quite enjoyed watching a Grand Designs yesterday. I don't know if it's a current one or a recent one, but Kevin MacLeod on Grand Designs was always somebody that I thought I would very happily have dinner with. I quite like the way he shows up. He's a little bit aspirational for me because he has a very gentle manner, which I don't think I always have.
He's a bit gloomy, though. You're not gloomy. He's a bit gloomier than you.
Oh, do you think he's gloomy?
Well, that's, he goes to people's houses and they're building them. For anybody outside the UK, this is a show where people have decided to build a ridiculous house for a ridiculous amount of money in a ridiculous place. And then he narrates their journey, and he's an architect and various things. And he always goes and says, "Huh, they think they're going to be able to do this for £1 million. That's funny. Oh, dear." And then it's just like, and then at the end, he always goes, "Well, actually, you know, it was okay." I really love him. I find him very cozy and reassuring. So, yeah, same thing.
Yeah. This one was about, they were trying to rebuild a house, and it was in a ruin in Wales. And what was interesting about it was that this couple had really liked this ruin, the history, the way that the walls had built up, and they wanted to build a sort of wooden structured house within it. And actually what they realized then was that the walls themselves weren't structurally sound, so they all had to come down. And the conversation that, you know, he arrived midway through this thing, what they had loved about this thing was the vegetation on the hillside, this lovely old building. And he arrived in the middle, the vegetation had all been like slashed and cut, the building had been decimated. And he was like, what they loved about this has gone. You know, are they going to be able to reconstruct it? And it just made me think, and I haven't quite got to any resolution on it yet, but I think a lot of artists, we really like aged patina on things. We're complete freaky nutters, aren't we, about taking photos of things like that. It made me think a little bit about trying to recreate something rather than it existing naturally. And your talk earlier about how you're going to put the canvas down on the floor and walk on it and let the drips happen, I think that's an interesting way of approaching, because I'm just trying to think, how am I going to get that sort of thing in new work without fabricating it in a fake way? So
yeah, an interesting. Because I told you last week about my sanded panels and my textures I'm building up, and you said, let them lead you wherever they're going to lead you. At the moment, they're not really leading me anywhere. They're just sitting there. But beautiful textures. And the problem you get once you do find your way of making the textures you love is that then you're like, okay,
now what?
And what's funny is, because I'm demoing that for my course, some of the people saw my idea, saw what I was doing, and thought, oh, that looks fun, I'll do that. And then they got stuck at the now what stage, and they're going, oh, but now I'm stuck, I don't know what to do. And I said, join the club. I have no idea, because I'm just starting out on this I have no idea what's going to happen. So yeah, once you get the lovely textures, it's like, now that I'm in love with the textures, I just want to keep the textures.
Yeah. And then we come back to the, is it enough? Okay. Do you want to hear what my joke is before I tell you why this is inspired?
Yes.
My joke is, this is a 6-year-old and they were having questions and answers. And the question was, do you know what a ghetto is? And the 6-year-old said, a fancy sort of cake. And I loved it. So this is from a thread. So there is a guy on Twitter called @George_Poynton_, and he is a teacher, and he started posting, I'm sure I've told you about him before, he started posting threads of questions that he asks his class, like, so they were reception, then year one, now they're year two, so they're 7-year-olds. And they're really funny. So he has a Friday roundup, and he has all these things that they say and his view on them, you know, and how it fits with the child he knows, like who's sensible, who's planner. So, and they're just beautifully, lovingly written. They're wonderful. And all these kids sort of have fans. So we have a fan on Ravi's take in life, and they're just lovely, really uplifting threads. But what it made me think was that this whole thing, so this whole thread was, I can't even remember what it was about, but it made me realize that this thing, do you know what a ghetto is, a fancy sort of cake, we approach anything from our own perspective in it and what we know, and we don't know what we don't know. So you don't know that you don't know the word ghetto or what it is. You've heard ghetto. It makes perfect. It's not even funny. Like, it's not funny. It's just the answer. And I think in Time to Shine, the people are in the early stages of doing that. And there are so many comments already of people going, oh, I understand this now. This bit alone is worth doing this for. And I love that when people get those little breakthrough things that they suddenly realize what it was that they didn't know, that they didn't even know to ask the question about. And that's a really difficult stage of learning. That's why it's funny when little kids do it, because we're ahead of them. We know.
Yeah.
We can see that. They don't know that. So it's lovely seeing that unfold. So there you go. There's a funny, there's a Twitter thread.
You've had all sorts of inspiration this week.
All sorts this week. Lots this week. What about you?
I haven't had tons of inspiration this week. I'm sure there has been, and I've forgotten about it. But you brought to mind something I've been doing recently, which has been very nice. When you mentioned Grand Designs, I have a subscription to My4, which is Channel 4 on the computer, because I can't bear television ads, just can't stand sitting through ads. And you don't have to watch ads if you have that. So I was looking back through their back catalogue of shows and what they have that you can watch. And I haven't been sleeping very well. So I need something relaxing and reassuring and not stressful. Grey's Anatomy is too much, people dying and drama for late night. So I found Location, 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 which I used to love watching with Phil and Kirsty. And I'm going back to watching those if I can't sleep. And I find it so lovely and reassuring. And I absolutely love those two. I would, like, you would go to the pub with them. I would have them just like be on my telly 24 hours a day doing whatever they want to do. And I would just happily watch them. I just find it. And Phil, for some reason, always took a big dislike to Phil Spencer. And there's not many people he takes a dislike to, but he'd go, oh, can't stand that guy. And I just really think they're both lovely. So I've been watching that, and it's very cozy, and it's nice to see. It's a bit like the happy ending of films when people, you see the show end. So they go look at houses, for anyone who can't watch the show. They go look at houses. They pick a house sometimes. They buy it. And the show ends with their offer's accepted and they'll be moving in a few weeks, and it doesn't go through. And then, you know, 3 years later, they fell out and got divorced, or this happened or that happened. It's just happy ending. Everyone gets what they want. And I really love that show. So, yeah, I've been indulging in that when I can't sleep, just for some cozy reassurance.
So you've not been watching Squid Game then?
What's Squid Game?
Oh, Squid Game apparently is becoming the most watched Netflix thing ever.
Oh, I've not even heard of it.
Yeah, I don't think you want to watch it at the moment. Don't watch it at the moment.
Okay. on Netflix. That's on Amazon Prime. Frasier's my other go-to security blanket if I want to watch something cozy.
Squid Game is Korean, and it's kind of like Hunger Games for adults.
Oh, no.
Not cheerful.
No, not at the moment.
Okay, so we're going to finish this week not with a prompt to come and find us on social media, but with a prompt for you to go and spend a little bit of time on your website or your mailing list. Balance it up a bit. Rebalance how much time you spend. They're both important. It's not that one is more important than another. They're both important. They both feed into each other, but just redress the balance of where you're putting your time and attention, and just make sure that when something happens with Facebook, then you won't panic about it.
Sounds good. All right, everybody. See you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.